My name is Johnny Dagger, Bigfoot Tracker. Welcome to the most real TV you will ever see. Don't ever try this at home. Johnny Dagger is a trained professional with over 30 years in the bush. He risks certain death and maiming with each and every issue to bring you the best, the most actual, the most real TV you will ever see. Are you ready for this? Are you ready for this?
Hold on. All right, good. We're recording. Excellent.
Sweet.
Sure looks like we're recording anyway.
That's our show. Take care.
Ba-dum, 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 ba-dum. But it sounds like it's recording me very loudly, so I'm going to have to be careful. Okay, so where were we? This is take two, everyone.
Yeah, take two. The first one was remarkably mediocre.
Act naturally. Yes. We were saying before we started that it has been a really long time since all three of us were on the same show. And looking back at the shows, it looks like it was December of last year. It was the last time that all of us were together. So this is a momentous occasion.
Yeah.
Or something.
We're not going to get into the whole thing that we're fighting. And that young lady named Yoko is responsible for it. But I'll just keep quiet about it.
Yeah, honestly, it was just because we're lazy. So So Scott, you're not far from a hurricane.
Yes. Well, what remains of it? I'm in Hudson, New York, with some friends, waiting to get back out to hike some more on the AT. The footage, by the way, is going really well.
Good.
For the documentary. Yeah, but it kind of disappointed. We were expecting. I have a GoPro cam now. You know, one of the things you strap on your head with the wide angle lens.
Yeah.
I wanted to walk out in the middle of the street and, you know, hopefully get hit by some debris. It's kind of petered out. It's raining, but not in a hurricane like manner.
Okay, so you could get wet if you went out right now, but.
Yeah, right. And yeah, nothing really amusing, or unless you want to see me get hit by slow-moving debris.
Right. I don't think that would be very exciting.
No.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to hear that.
The first take was better.
So as I was saying, we haven't had a chance to talk in a while, and but our last show was not that long ago, honestly. In Bigfoot show years, it was just like it was just the other day. But I was asking folks on our wall on Facebook at facebook.com/TheBigfootShow and what should we talk about? And a lot of people said the Erickson Project. And what I was saying before we went on is that, or actually after we went on the first time, was that I am unclear. There seems to be a lot of things that sort of fall under the Erickson Project, quote unquote, definition. So, Scott, you said you'd been actually researching this, which has got to be. And that's another Bigfoot show first right there. If you were
I know. Well, this is the thing. Okay, so I Googled Erickson Project. I'm at the official, you know, page right now, and it says about the project. This thing started in 2005. A gentleman named Erickson. He's got there's like three team members. But then they hooked up with, it looks like, Melba Ketchum.
Yes.
Who's involved with that DNA analysis. She's part of it. So they're all kind of, and by the way, who I just friended on Facebook before the show and see if there's any new tidbits you could reveal. And of course, she came back to me saying that the non-disclosure thing is still in effect.
I'm impressed. So not only did you do research, but you actually went and tried to find new information prior to, I mean, that's almost journalistic.
And I was fully clothed, which I think is.
At any point in this process, did you urinate into a cup?
No, but a saucepan is going to have to be washed about a week and a half.
All right, just checking.
Anyway. Okay,
so go ahead. What'd you find out?
And then I found out, actually, someone who's a part of the team members of the Erickson Project is actually a friend of mine on Facebook. A lady, she's actually a Princeton grad. Her first name's Lila.
Yeah, Lila. Yeah.
And so I sent her a message too. Haven't heard back from her if there's anything new to report. So in a nutshell, it looks like Paul had actually posted on our backstage notes the link to Autumn Williams's summary, which I think was actually – it's pretty clear and nicely laid out.
Yes.
About what's going on with this. And it looks like – I mean, Melba seems like, you know, a fairly smart lady. Seems like she knows what she's talking about. and she seems pretty excited about some possible findings, but they're waiting for peer review, which apparently is in the process of. She says it might take a while before they you know, get actual peer review, but it seems like at least a fairly good attempt to try to get some kind of conclusivity, if you will, in regards to the DNA. My hunch is it's probably going to be, well, there's not enough. Maybe it is Bigfoot DNA, maybe it isn't, but at least it seems to be a little more than I don't know, BFRO hype crap.
So, where did they say where the DNA came from?
I don't
What was it? Blood? Was it feces? Was it hair? Was it?
It was. I believe it was hair. And she also in that summary broke it down, which you guys probably already know, and some of our listeners. I thought was interesting about, you know, the best types of DNA. You know, skin is the best, then blood, and hair is actually the worst because she feels, actually her opinion, she says the hairs that have come in that she feels are likely Sasquatch. Again, that's a bit, I think, a tad presumptive, that it's hard to get anything out of the medulla, any kind of DNA out of that. And it's just very difficult, as we've all talked about before, to get it out of follicles, to get enough. So it seems like it's, you know, interesting. But at this point, you know, they're waiting for the peer review. And then according to the Erickson Project page, once the peer review comes in, then they're going to release the documentary. So
is this – and again, I could not catch up on this, and I'm going to be the stupid guy on today's show. Normally, I mean, honestly, Scott, I feel like
I don't like what you're inferring there.
We've kind of switched. We've kind of switched roles. So I'm gonna.
In fairness, before you go any further and declare yourself as the stupid guy in the show,
yes,
I did try and do some research on the Erickson Project prior to the show.
Wow.
But through a quirk of Google, got sidetracked and spent 2 hours reading about Android handsets on the Sony Ericsson page.
Oh, that happens to me all the time.
Sweet.
Which I've got to say was a lot more interesting.
So So my question, when I'm reading the Autumn Williams summary, which I agree is very thorough, by the end of it, we're talking about these guys who supposedly the hunters, quote unquote. Are we talking about DNA that was collected in? Because this is where these two events kind of merge in my head, and I'm not sure which thing we're talking about anymore. Where did this DNA come from? If it's hair DNA, is it down from Kentucky, or is it from somewhere else?
No. This is like Derek Randall's of the BFRO.
So it's Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, and frankly, I think the story is probably. Or shit.
What? So we'll come back to that then. So let's just put a pin in that. Yeah. We'll come back to the hunter
story.
Well,
it's just it's got so many goofy. It's just goofy. The story. There's like too much information. Bigfoot with his arms over his head, supposedly, and the guy thought I still thought it was a bear. You know, because bears have like 4 foot long arms. I mean, and then they supposedly shot the one, and then all that. So he said he shot the one Bigfoot. Then he said he shot the smaller Bigfoot, and then they went back when there was 2 feet of snow. To try to get DNA. They couldn't find the baby one, but they found a big slob of meat, like fatty meat with hair that matched what their sighting was. And then there's going to be some kind of DNA analysis with that. It
that's
reads
just weird.
That story. Yeah, that it sounds Georgia-esque, if you will.
So, but this has nothing to do with Melba Ketchum and the Erickson Project's DNA.
I think they might. They may have piggybacked it on. Hold on.
Were they trying to get? So maybe they were trying to get DNA from that. But and so because Melba Ketchum has sort of a, she's been trying to collect Bigfoot DNA sort of in a larger, like for a longer period of time, and from multiple sources. But the Erickson Project DNA. Look at this is where we sound like maybe not the experts we think we are, but that's an entirely different thing, right?
Well, can you? The link that, which of course is not up on my page right now, the link where that the Autumn Williams summary.
Yes, I'm looking at it.
Can you send that to me via the?
I sure can.
Thingy, I want to look at it again.
The thingy. Because
I actually. Okay.
I just sent
now,
it to you.
Now, while Scott is reading that, before
yes,
we go any further,
yes,
my
sir.
Problem with this whole thing at the moment, I have a few problems, but my main problem with this is with. Dr. Ketchum herself.
Yes, I thought you might.
I'll read this this line here from Morton Williams. I don't know whether this is exactly Dr. Ketchum's words or whether there's some artistic license going on here. But it says, Dr. Melba Ketchum is asked how many unknown samples she has that have been collected in the last year and whether unknowns means that she has tested them and they've come back as a large unknown primate. My problem with this is just this discussion of them being large unknown primates.
Yeah.
If it DNA, how can you tell how big they with are? The best foot in the world, DNA, you could sample Brian's DNA and my DNA, and you wouldn't appreciate that I'm twice the size of Brian just from the DNA.
Right.
Right.
The DNA won't tell you whether a primate is big or little. It's really simple stuff, this.
Well, so and this is something that I do want to get into sort of as a corollary to all of this. I mean, I guess at this point, before we move too further afield from this, I don't know that until such time as they actually become public, this data that supposedly came out of the Erickson Project that Melba Ketchum is having peer-reviewed, until that comes out, we really can't say anything about it. I mean, maybe they
just like every other show.
Right. So maybe they have it, maybe they don't. Maybe it's good, maybe it's not. I mean, I have lots and lots of questions with regard to any DNA sample. You have to find out how was it handled, what's the chain of evidence, who's had it, who hasn't, where was it discovered? I mean, there's so many questions, especially if you're talking. And again, I will say up front, I have not stayed in a Holiday Inn Express for months and months, and I know nothing about DNA, but I'm going to guess that if you're talking about something that is probably going to look an awful lot like a human's DNA, that who has had it and how has it been handled is an even bigger question than it would be if it was like horse or something.
Right. Two points I just want to say, and kind of, I'm kind of split on Ketchum. I guess maybe compared to some of the more apparent crackpots in the field, she seemed relatively sane. But I think Paul's point is good, along with this, where she talks about, this is a direct quote from her in Autumn's article, and as far as remaining objective, she goes, two of the PhDs on our team do peer review, for crying out loud, so we know what we've done to overkill and make sure that everything is as it should be. So the science will pass. It's just getting past somebody who might have a preconceived notion. They can nitpick it, but they can't really nitpick it because we're covering all our bases. What it'll boil down to is just if they'll pass it from one to the next and drag it out. That's really the worst fear I have. I mean, they can't really completely turn it down. We'll keep doing it until we get it done. We will, because it's there. So she seems convinced, but yet it seems if you're going to remain objective, let the paper speak for itself instead of making this bold claim that it is there, so.
I guess, and that gets back to, I guess, what she would have. So, man, this is, I mean, on the one hand, DNA isn't going to lie, right? As far as I know, no one can cook up a batch of unknown primate DNA. Scott just went offline. Darn it, Scott.
It depends on what the scientific definition of unknown is.
Hold on, we're getting Scott back.
Hey, man. Hey. I'm here. I'm back. I'm on it might be a little worse. I'm on my iPhone now.
No, you actually sound better. So
really? Awesome.
So the fantastic thing that I was just saying was that as far as I know, you can't cook up a batch of DNA and call it unknown primate. I mean, DNA is one of those things where it is really good evidence because it is what it is. So maybe that could be what she's saying.
Yeah. Yes, I agree with Paul.
It's not as clear cut as that.
Yeah.
The problem is that when these reports, we've had years and years and years of researchers going off and getting reports done by various people and misinterpreting the reports that come back because they don't want to understand them. They want to read into them what they want. And when things come back as unknown, it usually means that the sample wasn't good enough, that it's likely to be a primate, it has primate markers, but the DNA sample is unknown because the DNA isn't clear enough. That there's just not enough to get a proper sample out of it. And they read primate, unknown, and they put the words around the other way around and say, oh, this is a DNA report of an unknown primate. Look what we've got. It doesn't work like that.
So,
but oh, can I just say one thing? But wouldn't sure. they? I mean, according to like folks like Seth Skeptic, who was great on Bigfoot forums, and you know who claims that you that DNA technology is such now that you with DNA you would be able to classify and it would be able to be accepted a new species without actually a body. The thing is that when the DNA, the patterning that comes out, you know, when the DNA is analyzed and they look in the, you know, this particular pattern, they could conclusively say, okay, it's not this, it's not that, it's not this, it's probably part of this tree or this branch. But I think what I'd like to actually know more of is, well, could that pattern, which you could deduce this generality of it being not connected to anything known, could contamination cause right. that patterning?
Right.
That, you know, there was kind of that in the O.J. Simpson case too. That, well, contamination. Yeah, but what are the odds it would still turn out to be to match O.J. Simpson's DNA?
Right. Well, and that's kind of what I was saying earlier. It seems to me that if you're talking about something that is so close to human, that how the evidence was handled, who handled it, what was the chain of custody, how was it stored, how old is it, how was it collected, under what conditions, all of those things. Become part of the question, it seems to me.
Well, they become the main part of the right. question.
Well, she claims, unless
the chain of custody is solid and reliable,
right,
then any sample is suspect.
Well, right. you know, another thing she did mention, sorry, my computer coming back on there, is she seemed to suggest in that Autumn Williams summary that they have held some samples back. So in other words, I mean, sample, let's say there was 7 or 8 samples of hairs, right? They analyzed it. They said, this is this. So if it gets to the peer review stage and they say, oh, this is interesting, we want to test it, then they would provide those additional hairs that were part of that batch to the next researching group.
Because that's what happens, sure. right? When you test exactly it for DNA, you lose the sample. Is that correct?
Yeah, because it gets that's consumed. Great. I mean, that's really good science, and if it turns out that then it's going to be what you would then you'd have the one group would believe it, then the next one would say it. Now something like this, because it's such in many people's view such a crazy notion that there could be such a thing as a Bigfoot, a Sasquatch, they would want more hair samples or even more a body or whatever. But I think go ahead.
No, I was just going to circle back to something you said. Could you use DNA only to prove the existence of this animal? And I think you could, again, if it was a good sample that had the right provenance and you knew where it was and it was a repeatable, the conclusion again and again by multiple scientists. And I think you could, but I don't think that's going to stop anybody from going out there and plugging one, because they're still going to want to know so much more than the DNA will tell them.
Sure. I found the quote, incidentally. It's about... it's just in the 2009 section of Autumn Williams' blog post. Dr. Ketchum states, this sample, she's talking about a sample that came from Bhutan.
Mm-hmm. From Destination Truth.
From Destination Truth. This sample did taste very clearly on the human panel of markers. That makes it a primate, and it makes it a large primate.
Hmm.
Now, with the best will in the world, even if it has human markers, it doesn't necessarily make it a physically large primate.
I guess the question is a chimp a large primate? Scott.
Wow, well, again, it depends on your definition. You know, I would think compared to all known primates, a chimp would be a large primate.
A large primate.
Because I mean, there's so many small monkeys in the world.
Provided you can prove that it's a chimp.
But
right.
If you can't prove it's a chimp. It's just a primate.
I do agree that she might be stretching it a little bit when she says it's a large primate. I don't know enough about DNA.
Yeah, or she's not revealing idiotic. Or explaining it.
I love it when that happens. Scott? Scott? Wow. This is painful. Scott?
What? Oh no.
Scott.
Is it doing it?
Hello? It was awesome. Whatever it was doing was awesome. I'm gonna try calling you back on your phone.
Oh, okay, wait.
You sound good right now, but
Yeah.
You want to keep trying?
No, I think it just went through a phase. Sure. If it cleared up.
Maybe all right, let's keep going. Let's keep going.
No, that's not. I got to hold it close, real. Okay, man.
So Scott's using Skype on his iPhone.
He is.
Yeah.
But it's probably going over the 3G network, which is, you know, a little sketchy.
Oh.
Yeah. So I have a question for you guys. Let's just say for argument. So what would the perfect DNA sample look like?
A sample from a dead Bigfoot.
Would it?
Yeah.
It'd look a large head with hair on it.
Well, that's a little bit more than a DNA sample. So, was it you that said skin first, blood second?
Skin. That's what Melba said. But yeah. Now that, you know, yeah.
Oh, this is pathetic.
In blood, then hair.
Okay.
I think he said skin, then toenails, then...
No, blood.
Navel lint, then hair. Lint.
Navel lint is an outstanding source of DNA. So...
A fecal sink with a cherry on top.
I'm just trying to imagine how something like that would be collected in a way that would make it impossible to be contaminated by something. I mean, assuming that you don't have the body in front of you.
Well, if you're wearing gloves,
yeah.
It's just like a crime scene. It has to be. It would have to be that way. You can't, you know, get, you know, with latex.
So what
gloves.
If you did this? What if you did this? If you had a very short chain of custody, could you take a DNA sample from everyone who had handled the sample?
Sure.
Yeah.
And use that to filter out potential contamination.
Sure.
Yes.
If you had a very short chain of custody.
Yeah.
Okay. So again, when it comes to something like this Erickson DNA sample, and I don't believe anybody's talked about how many hands it went through before it got to Melba. Scott.
I mean, the thing is that there's, I think we've lost Scott, haven't we?
I'm going to call him back. Scott, can you hear me? Okay, hold on a minute. Whoops. I hung up on everybody.
No, not me.
Oh, excellent. Okay. I really hate... Can I tell you how much I hate this new version of Skype?
It sucks.
That's so bad. Okay, now I'm calling him on the phone.
Hello?
Hello, Scott.
Hello?
Hello.
How does that... Yeah.
Now you sound like you're on the phone, but I don't think you're not going to get
crazy.
Have you
noticed that these days when you end the call or the call drops out on you, you don't get the little questionnaire that says, how bad was this call?
Oh, I just did. I just skipped past it, though.
Did you?
Yeah.
I never get those.
I said it was horseshit, and then they wanted to know all kinds of reasons why, and I didn't feel like getting into it with them. Okay, good. So
you
we're back.
You now sound like we're doing a broadcast in 1953.
That's okay.
Okay.
We're discussing outside. And with the wind rushing by, it'll sound like we're on the Weather Channel or something.
And were we doing this in 1953, we'd be saying, when do you think they're going to find Bigfoot?
Next year.
this young Peter Byrne guy's got a good chance there in the Himalayas, I think.
Okay. So, I'm looking at our Facebook wall, and some folks are still talking about this hunter thing, and this is where I got confused, and it sounds like some of our listeners are sort of conjoining this Erickson Project DNA Melba Ketchum with the Hunter story, because apparently they tried to pull DNA from that as well. So, but these are two separate things entirely.
They seem to be two separate things. I think the only connection is Dr. Ketchum's lab being used to examine multiple sources of DNA. I don't know why. Clearly, she's got an interest in the subject. It may be that her lab's cheap or free, which is why she's getting so much DNA to examine.
How much would it cost to do this, to get DNA? I mean, and I don't know, are there different kinds of examination for DNA? I mean, what is it? Just you just put it in the DNA omatic and it comes out at the other end with a little strip of paper or something? How much does this cost?
It's like the machine in the Batman series on TV. A little strip of paper comes out, lots of lights and whistles and bells, and then you get this tiny little strip of fortune cookie paper. It says primate.
So you put the DNA in a drawer, you close the drawer, you push a button, and it goes doot 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 doot, and at the end this paper comes out.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And only Batman's got one.
Well, that can't...
Which is why it takes so long. This is why you don't see him out in Gotham anymore. It's because he's in his cave all the fucking time.
Running DNA samples all day long.
DNA samples.
All right. Well, that explains a lot. Quite a bit, actually. I'm going to move on to the next subject. One of the other things that came up last week, I think it was last week, on the Alliance of Independent Bigfoot Researchers Facebook page, let me pull it up, was a story about some tracks that had been found in a field in Duluth, Minnesota, which is funny because, well, you know, we don't get a lot of Bigfoot sightings up here. We get a few. And what I found interesting in this is towards the end, the reporter was talking to Professor Meldrum about casts, and specifically about casts that were found on Finding Bigfoot. And he said, and I'm quoting him here, they did send some prints after they found the first Georgia footprints, Meldrum said, but I couldn't get back to them in time. I concluded they were bear tracks. One of the hosts, which is Cliff Brackman, raved about these tracks, that they were some of the best he'd seen, and he did say that. It's unfortunate, he added, you get these amateur experts making silly pronouncements, and the skeptics use it as ammunition to discredit all the evidence that comes to light. So I'm going to say...
Said by the man who thinks Paul Freeman's casts are legitimate.
Yes, yeah, he does. Yes, he does.
And in fairness, said that the Snowwalker footage was authentic.
Well,
couldn't have been made by a human.
Okay, fine. So that's out there.
whilst we're talking theories, I am beginning to think that Jeff Meldrum has a twin brother.
Wow.
Because he gets onto so many interviews.
Yes.
And
he
surely can't have time for all these TV interviews and documentaries.
Well, it's summer.
He must have a twin that he just brings out just to keep the TV.
Or Naive Meldrum, that's his name.
They've developed an artificial intelligence that talks to reporters and just repeats the same sort of series of pronouncements over and over again. So I'm going to say two things. First of all,
Now, of course, if I was Jeff, I would be using the twin brother to deal with all the lunatics at conventions that keep coming up to him to talk to him.
Yeah, this is why I don't think he has a twin. Because he could have one in... Yeah, anyway. So, I remember seeing these prints, and there are some pictures of them that I found on Cryptomundo. They don't... And I'm going to say, I've seen bear tracks. I've studied bear tracks because I know that they're often confused for Bigfoot tracks or human tracks because, you know, if you get a double strike, you get the front over the back, whatever. These don't look like bear tracks to me based on what I've seen on the interwebs and based on what I saw on the show. I know you guys may have a different opinion about that.
I was just going to say quickly, Paul, after watching that clip with Brackman, I just watched a little of that before we started taping. My very first thought, again, having some experience in TV and just the general tone of horse shit of that show, it would not surprise me at all if somebody in the production company made those tracks because they needed something dramatic. I think the odds of finding something that resembled a Bigfoot track when you happen to be shooting a Bigfoot show is nearly astronomical. Nearly astronomical. So I think... honestly, from what I've seen of Cliff, he seems like a nice guy, but he doesn't seem very scientifically rigid or scientifically, if he's going to be scientific, he should be rigid. I think he's very, I don't know, wishy-washy and you've got producers whispering in ears, we need this point of view and blah, blah, blah. I just think the whole thing is crap. All right.
Well, there you go.
I didn't mean to hold back.
No, seriously, you're going to get an ulcer if you don't really let it out.
I think we've said this before. We've said this on the last show that I was on was, very simply, it's television, and we've got to bear in mind that it is nothing more than television. It's not, well, it is purporting to be a scientific show, but it's about as scientific as America's Got Talent.
Well,
exactly. I mean, how do they rationalize this? It's so, again, if you're not doing something comedically, like with the intent dryly, which they don't seem to be, I mean, they want humor in the show, but they are clearly trying to pass a lot of that shit off
as being probably set when they're saying there's a Squatch out in the... It's so presumptive, and yet the BFRO still has the balls or the insanity to say, we're the only scientific organization working on this. I mean, it's so patently schizophrenic and or horseshitty as to be outright laughable. Let's go to a clip.
So I tend to agree with what you're saying with regard to that show in general. But what I thought was interesting about this particular episode, and the reason why I think it went first, honestly, is because they did come out with something that looks like a Bigfoot cast and a track. And it may be the fact that, you know, if you listen to Cliff put a video up that gave a little background of the show, and I think I posted that to our wall earlier in the week. The story he tells is that he says he didn't even find the track. Who did?
The producer pointed it out to him.
It wasn't one of the producers. It was one of his guys, one of his local dudes. Anyway, I can't remember his name. But looking at this cast, I guess I'm surprised, and I'm not going to call myself an expert in such things, but I'm surprised that Meldrum would dismiss it as a bear. It doesn't look bearish to me. It looks like
That's weird. I just think, look, you know, until we actually have a Bigfoot foot, all footprints. I mean, the clowns of the field who say, "Well, this is what a Bigfoot print is." You don't know it's a Bigfoot print. You do not. You might. You know, I think the probability this is higher or lower, but nobody knows until we actually have the morphology of an actual specimen.
Wouldn't the clowns in the field know what a big footprint looks like?
Of course, maybe. Who knows who's had a sighting, who hasn't had a sighting? we don't know, man. I mean, it's just such. They talk with such confidence about what they claim that it's. I know I'm repeating myself, and it obviously chased my mad.
Well, okay, so I got you, Scott. So, but let's talk about the Hereford cast as an example.
Yeah.
At some point, I mean, I totally agree with you that until we have a foot to match into the tracks, we can't know with an absolute 100% certainty that this is what's making these tracks. But in the case of Hereford, which is where he tracked the thing like a quarter of a mile, and this was far from the initial sighting report. I mean, the Hereford went up there and found this thing. Some of these are remarkably good tracks that have been cast. And are you calling into question all Bigfoot tracks?
Yes, to a degree. What I'm saying is, do I believe that all Bigfoot tracks that have been found are probably fake? No. What I'm saying is our level of knowledge of knowing about any particular track is always going to have some degree of uncertainty, and not like philosophical uncertainty. I mean forensically uncertain, because I just don't think Bigfoot, quote-unquote Bigfoot track, are not that hard to fake. You know, I mean, people have shown how to do this stuff, and they find it, and they're excited, and wishful thinking's kicked in full. It's just, if you're going to apply the scientific method, you assume nothing. You take the data and you consider all possibilities, and that's what you have. You can hypothesize, you can theorize, but when you use language of certainty, like these clowns do, they're jerkweeds.
Jerkweeds.
I mean, there's no other way to put it.
Jerkweeds.
They're anti-scientific jerkweeds looking for fame or notoriety or whatever. It's just, I don't know if I said this enough, but it's bullshit. We'll be right back. and again, that said, it doesn't mean that any particular thing isn't a Bigfoot track. That doesn't mean that. But when you're speaking as though you're like when Moneymaker talks about, well, we know what legitimate evidence is and we know what fake evidence is. To a degree, I agree. When you see obviously fake stuff, like I would consider the Freeman pretty obviously fake. But
everything he ever found, you're saying, is obviously fake?
I think probably I think he
faked enough stuff that you've got to discount everything that he did.
Yeah. Okay. He slept. That guy must have slept with a red flag over him. Let me just put that. So I just think it's a slippery slope, and you see it so much in this field. When one little assumption sneaks in there, it just cascades into this whole thing of, and it's all based on these, it's like, this is real. This is, well, we don't know it's real. I mean, follow it, hypothesize, investigate further, see what you can find leading to possible conclusive physical evidence. But obviously that hasn't happened yet. Maybe those hairs, for example, we've been talking about, maybe they are Bigfoot hairs. Maybe the peer review will come through on it. But we're still at this point of non-knowing. And I think a lot of people, because of the excitement of the field, their reason gets overshadowed by the emotion, and they start working on unsound presumptions, or just presumptions, which is not good. I mean, unless you're speaking hypothetically, but they turn it into all of a sudden, well, we know this. We know it did that. No, we don't know it.
But it does seem to me that there is a part of science is, and maybe it's just the language we're using and the way that we're speaking about these things that you're talking about. But at some point, you do have to make hypotheses, and you have to sort of say, well, I observed this, so I'm going to assume it means that until I can figure out that it doesn't.
The problem is that when you have a field of interest such as this, there are so many people involved in it who simply won't look at any evidence to the contrary. They won't use any sort of scientific method.
Well, we can't help those people.
They're completely blinkered.
Right.
But the point is that when science does get interested in it, they try and reason with these people and say, okay, we think there's something interesting here, but what you're attributing to it isn't it. When they still talk about, talk crap about the subject, the scientists just back off, as fast as they can. I mean, a good example here, over here in England, of course, are things like crop circles, which every summer, the same thing comes up with them. Anybody with a sensible brain knows that they are fake. Yeah. I know people who make a living making crop circles. And yet there are still...
It's been demonstrated out there.
Yeah, and they make quite a good living doing it.
How do they make a living making crop circles? Who pays for that?
Quite often, TV production companies.
No kidding.
Newspapers. One of my associates got paid a little while ago to do one for Weetabix.
Seriously?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And those that are just done for the sheer hell of it, the farmers quite often charge people to walk into the field to have a look at them. There's money to be made doing this. Not a lot of money, but there is money to be made. But I do know somebody that was flown out to New Zealand for about £10,000 to make a crop circle for a TV show.
As long as we're talking about crop circles, there's currently a commercial playing here in the States of a Pringles that has a new like multigrain. And anyway, in this Pringles multigrain commercial, there's a bunch of kids and they're making a crop circle with like the boards, and they're stepping on the boards, and then they pull back and it's like a big Pringles crop circle. So I think it's funny that like not only have crop circles entered into the popular culture to such an extent that you can use them in advertising, but how you fake them has entered into the popular culture to such an extent that you can use them for advertising.
But the problem is there are still people who will go out there and try and convince you that they're being made by aliens. And it's, and we see the same thing with these bloody orb photos of dust.
But I saw that movie Signs. Those clearly were made by aliens.
Well, they were, but they weren't in they weren't in England, so we don't worry about them.
All
right. Before we get off the subject of crop circles, Brian, have you seen the latest episode of Doctor Who?
I have it. Spooled up. I'm going to see it later tonight.
There's a good crop circle link in there.
Excellent.
I was just going to say, to Paul's point, one last thing. I mean, I would agree largely with what he said. I would say this one caveat. I wouldn't say absolutely that every single crop circle that had ever been made has been made by humans, but we know we've seen humans demonstrate how they do this.
Right.
So to think that it's probable that it's made by an alien, what is that based on? It's based on shit. It's based on wishful thinking unless someone directly witnessed something come out of a craft, do that,
sure.
They weren't hallucinating, then they would. But we have it explained in one way.
But so, the trouble is these have been documented for a long time before the modern seriologists, as they like to call themselves, or circle makers, got involved. Hmm. Which means that there's clearly something going on there. The big patterns are clearly hoax, but there might be some sort of natural process that causes these original round
other
patterns.
It could just be some
sort of alien experiment to see what we do, like put a couple of circles in a field, like, oh look, now they're copying us.
But all the crap that goes on around them between the hoaxers and the lunatics, frankly, that believe these are made by ET, the scientists just back away from it, like there's no speed limit. So we can't reason with any of these people. We're not getting involved.
And honestly, that right there, that the way that quote unquote real scientists back away from it concerns me with regard to Bigfoot and finding someone to do a real DNA study, because my concern would be that they would say, "Oh, this is Bigfoot DNA. I don't want anything to do with it. You know, go talk to somebody else." Because even though
that guy's not a scientist, that he's a chicken shit. He is. He's like, "Oh, I wait. My tenure's more important." Yeah. See, it works on the other side too. Anybody who rules out the possibility because it hasn't been discovered yet. I mean, those people are such a dime a dozen. There was a lady actually was hiking on the AT the other day. And I was asking her about some strange going-ons on this mountain, just wanted to get her theory. And she goes, "Oh, no, that doesn't happen." And then she just goes, "And there is no Bigfoot." And she was dead serious. And I punched her in the ovaries and I left.
I think that might be physical assault. You might be in trouble for that. Punching a lady in her ovaries does not sound like a very nice thing.
Well, see, I think she was past childbearing age anyway.
So, all right, I don't even know where we are right now or how we got here. So the other thing I'm going to say with regard to that quote that is in the Duluth, whatever the hell it was, the Duluth News Tribune. I thought it was telling to hear Meldrum refer to Cliff as an amateur expert, when I thought they were on pretty good terms. I thought that they were like buds, because you know they've exchanged a lot of information and actual casts themselves, I don't know. He doesn't sound like he thinks too much of Cliff when he calls him a amateur expert making silly pronouncements. That's not what you say about your friends.
Well, I think because he knows, because he's been in that state of mind before. I think Meldrum. And we talked about this on another show. I think he's actually matured a bit as far as, he hasn't made as many wild assumptions as he used to with Freeman, although he still publicly hasn't, you know, probably maybe because he bought the damn things, but still thinks apparently Freeman's casts are real and, Paul alluded to the snow creature footage. But Meldrum does seem a little more tempered when he's on shows now. He's not making as many bold pronouncements, which is good. I just think it's part of his maturation.
Let me ask you a question about that. So the Snowwalker thing, how long do we make him carry that around his neck? I mean, at some point, do we just say, okay, fine, he was wrong? Or because, you got John Green says that he thinks that the Osman tale was believable, and I don't know anybody that thinks that. But I don't hold it against him. I just think it's a blind spot in the man, right? And so, at some point, I mean, we can't all be right all the time, right?
It's not for me.
It wasn't that he thought it was real. It was that he as a scientist, John Green's a newspaper man.
Correct.
He's not a scientist, so you can give him a little bit more slack. Dr. Meldrum, we've all met him. I think he's a terrific guy.
Yeah.
But as a scientist, he went on TV and said that no human could walk in that way. That it clearly couldn't be a human. He didn't say, "I think it's a Bigfoot." He's he said that it couldn't be a human. And that's those are two different things.
Yeah, and Brian, I think the thing is, I only usually bring it up when you hear people gush about Meldrum as though anything that comes out of his mouth is as though he's the Pope of Bigfootery. And that if he's the Pope of Sasquatchery, then I understand why a lot of scientists don't take this thing seriously, because he made enough gullible pronouncements in the past. I think he's made a lot less lately, which is great. I mean, I think all three of us agree is that there's certainly enough circumstantial evidence to warrant further investigations.
Yeah.
If you ask me if I believe Sasquatches exist, I'd say hell yes. As a belief, yes. But as scientific knowledge, hell no. It hasn't met the qualifications in that realm. So,
in fairness to Dr. Meldrum, he is a perfectly decent human being, unlike, and has never been in the Hitler Youth.
And as far as we know, I don't believe.
Has never made pronouncements that in the 70s some forms of paedophilia were acceptable.
No, he's never said that.
Who has?
He is Mormon, though.
the thing that bothers me is that when we do get scientists involved in Bigfoot research, it always comes with issues. And the likes of Dr. Meldrum, you know, fair play to him, he's interested in the subject. But from a scientific point of view, he's perhaps too interested in the subject.
Yeah.
And he believes that Bigfoot exists. So for that very starting point is in many ways an unscientific point of view. And that's where Grover Krantz went wrong, in that he got to the stage where he believed that Bigfoot existed, and so any evidence that came across his desk, he looked at it from the point of view of the creature exists. Now, fair enough, if you've seen one, great, you know it exists. But if you're working like me, I haven't seen one, I have to look at everything from the point of view of, first of all, prove it.
Okay, so prove that it exists. So I'm not a scientist, right? So obviously, whatever I think, who cares? But you play one on this show. I don't. But what I would say, and we're all in agreement. I believe we all think they exist, and though only one of us has had something that could be described as an actual encounter with one.
You keep saying this, Brian. I do not believe they exist. I want them to exist. But until I've seen one, I don't believe them.
See, I don't know what to do
with
that.
I wouldn't believe them either. They're very untrustworthy.
So here's what I'm going to say. So here's where I am, Paul. And I know so many people now who have seen them. I know people who I trust literally – let me finish – with my life. And either they are lying, bold-faced lying to me, or they saw a Bigfoot. So when I say – well, I never saw one, so I don't believe it. I'm essentially saying I don't believe them. And the fact is I do believe them. So yeah. if I have good friends, these are not people that I only know through the internet. These are people who I've spent like good quality time with. They say they've seen Bigfoot. It could not be anything else based on what they're saying to me. Then what else am I to say except that I believe they're there, because I've never seen a mountain lion either, but I know people who have, you know, and of course mountain lions are different things. I totally get
that. Yeah, they're a documented species. We know they exist.
Right. So if I am a scientist, I should pretend I'm a scientist now, and I'm not. And I'm hanging out with these people, and I'm in this field of study, and so many and again, like me, they know so many people who have said to them that they've seen them. I guess what I'm getting at is, and I'm not discounting what you're saying, because I do believe that science at the end of the day has to be dispassionate and has to be based on facts. But at some point, I don't want to hold it against them that they start to believe, quote unquote, because they've heard so many stories and they know so many people and they've seen the evidence. At some point, if you're a scientist, you have to believe in what you're studying, even if you can't prove it. It seems to me I guess I'm struggling with this, like criticizing them for going so far as to say they exist without ever having seen one themselves, because I go so far as to say they exist. Again, I'm not a scientist and I'm not trying to prove it scientifically, But I guess I don't know. I guess I don't expect science to be, you know, the scientists to be superhuman and capable of you know, living that way. I couldn't.
The trouble with that, Brian, is that I look at it from the other point of view. I too know people that say they've seen these things. With a lot of these people, I am convinced that they believe they have seen what they think they see. In the same way that I have met people who in the summer of 1985 will swear blind that they saw statues of the Virgin Mary move and weep when we know they didn't. And thousands of people have reported seeing the same thing. It doesn't mean that it happened, and it doesn't mean that they're wrong either. They believe that that's what they saw.
But the Virgin Mary doesn't get down and walk around and leave footprints. And I mean, I guess I'm with you for most of that, though. I think the Virgin Mary is not quite the same thing. But
she's a partier, dude. She's a total
partier. She's a wildcat. You get a little of that, sanctuary wine in her.
The stance that I take, and I probably take this a little firmer than I used to, is that I think all of these sightings are fantastic anecdotal evidence. But what they're doing is they're leaving us with a situation where I believe the subject is worthy of investigation, and it's worthy of continued investigation until we prove it one way or the other.
I think I'd like to chime in here real quickly. I think, you know, our perspectives are formed by a lot of things that go on in our life. And see, one, you know, hearing what Paul says, I agree a lot with what Paul says. But I think also one reason Paul really holds a hard line on, because it's what he does for a living. It's part of what, I mean, right? You deal with.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And I sit in case conferences with defendants who will swear blind to me that they didn't do what I can prove that they did.
Right.
And I'll sit in conferences with them, and I know what they've done because I've seen all the evidence. I know more about what they've done than they do, because I've analysed all the data, and I know a heck of a lot more about the way the data patterns form on the computers than they do. But right. They will sit there and tell me it wasn't me. I didn't do it. And I know they're lying, and they know I know that they're lying.
But that's not the same.
Just like
as
Bob Gimlin. It's anyway.
That's not the same as a friend of yours saying that they saw a Bigfoot when they went out in the woods. They had a clear daylight sighting. I mean, that's a different thing entirely.
No, what we see are quite often are people that convince themselves of a particular story. And some of these people that I've come across in case conferences and I've worked on their cases, you know, you get to the stage where you could easily believe that they think that is that their version of events is true.
Well, I think that is a problem in this field too, because I do know some other folks who have had sort of marginal encounters that with retelling have become a lot more impressive over time. So there is the problem with this is that you've got the spectrum of people who say what they saw and it seems very straightforward and clear. And you have others who have embellished and I don't believe they think they're lying, but they.
Well, I was reading a few months ago that technically what happens when you remember something, sort of recount a story from your memory, is that you essentially overwrite that memory.
Yes, I read the same thing.
Remembering it.
I don't remember where I read that, but I remember the same thing.
Which is why when stories get embellished and these sort of things happen and the retelling of stories, people genuinely believe.
Yeah.
Here's a good example. The other month, we had the last of the space shuttle missions. I asked a few people that I knew, the majority of, you know, did they remember the first shuttle launch? And the timing of the shuttle launch was interesting here, because they all said the same thing. Oh, I remember watching that at school. And one of the guys that works for me, he said, yeah, they wouldn't show it at my school. My father came and took me out of class to watch it. The shuttle launch was on a Sunday.
It was also like really early in the morning, if I remember correctly.
Well, for us, it was midday.
Right.
But the shuttle launch had been aborted the week before. So we all saw the aborted launch in school over in England. But the real first shuttle launch was on a Sunday. So nobody saw the first shuttle launch in school. It just couldn't have happened unless they were in detention and went to school on a Sunday. But the number of people that I spoke to here over the last few months about it, that when you pull up, you know, when you show them the information about the first shuttle launch, I that's amazing. I could have sworn I saw that at school. I've been telling everybody I saw it at school for the last 20 years. People remember things badly, which is why the likes of, you know, I'm convinced that the likes of Bob Hieronymus can easily pass a polygraph test, because that's what he's remembered so often that he probably believes it.
Or he's just a really good liar. But I thought it was interesting.
Or he was in the suit.
Or he was a really good liar. The that idea that when you recall a memory, you're actually taking it off of a shelf, you're handling it, you're turning it over in your head, and then you're putting it back on the shelf, and it's not the same as it was when it came off,
yeah,
is a really interesting notion.
Yes.
That I think. Go ahead. Somebody's just going to talk.
I was just going to say, kind of in summary of what you guys have been yammering about for about an hour and a half, is the fact I don't think Paul would have a problem with you saying, Brian, because I know where you're coming from an intuitive viewpoint. You hear a person, you believe that person, they just seem. Paul, I think Paul or someone with Paul's similar mindset would say, look, as long as you're saying that you feel you've got a gut instinct or you think the probability is such that at least a portion of these people are telling the truth, just don't say that it's the scientific method, which you would agree with as well. It's just like, you could be right. You might be right. It's just not scientific, and it should be, and as is the case now in this phenomena, is the starting point for a lot of people to warrant further investigation.
See, I totally agree, you know, that accepting what I have heard from people who I trust as being the truth and then trying to prove that using the scientific method are two separate things.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
I'm not going to approach, and again, I am not a scientist, so it is highly unlikely that I will employ the, you know, perfect scientific method in anything that I do. But I can't approach
well, you don't
it
have
as
to
if
be a scientist.
I'm not approaching it as if I'm trying to prove this sort of like nebulous question in the universe. I believe what I'm trying to prove here. So I understand what you're saying. That could lead me in a bad direction, because I could be saying, oh, this, you know, evidence A, that's clearly Bigfoot, so I'm going to keep following that. In reality, it's not. It's beavers, right? Or something like that.
I think a really good example of this, I mean, the most extreme, and he's a really nice guy, I got to say, you know, and we're Facebook
Who are we throwing on the bus now?
Well, I'm just going to say, like, Matthew Johnson is, you know,
oh,
the guy,
Dr. Johnson,
Dr. Johnson, every time he goes out, I'm not exaggerating, every time I've read that he's going to find something.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'm not really convinced he's lying. I think he really believes what he's doing. But the odds of what he's claiming are so astronomical.
Do you think that gets worse for people who think they've seen a Bigfoot?
Well, I also think the thing with Dr. Johnson, I think what's mixed in here is perhaps some religious belief too. He's a really hyper religious guy, and my own theory, this is just my opinion, is I think he kind of thinks in a sense he's God designated Bigfooter. So therefore, every time God's naturally going to lead him to find Bigfoot every time. So, I that's just kind of the feeling. Again, the feeling. Can I prove it? No, not scientific. I'm just saying when I'm listening to this guy and I read what he writes, it's like, wow. Not one photograph, not, you know, sure, there's a lot of impressions, but we know people can make impressions, and there's a lot of, you know, like you said earlier, blob prints.
Impressions, right.
Yeah. So,
no, but, well, okay, so we've closed the book on the Georgia track. I don't know. I think it looks really interesting. It's got toes. Could it be human? Sure, it's not outside the scope of human footprint size.
It could be human, a bear, or Bigfoot, or a fake.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, all right.
We know one thing. It's remarkably mediocre TV. So come on.
Well, but they got a second season. They're filming it right now. In fact, they were in Minnesota filming it, which I didn't even know they were doing that until after they left.
That's like saying Hitler got more funding to go into another country.
No, come on.
I mean, the thing is, if you look at say the Twitter posts about Finding Bigfoot, most of them were, God, this show's fantastic. This is great. These guys are fantastic. It's television.
But my question is, what does it hurt?
Why shouldn't they get a second show? Totally they pulled hurt. In viewers.
What does it hurt if they get a second show?
Doesn't hurt me in the slightest. No.
Well, I think it's always whatever the medium, whatever the thing, when you're intentionally bullshitting people without the intent of humor, I just think it's morally wrong. I think it's appalling.
If we take that stance, we're going to have to shut down every single television station on the planet.
Well, most political proclamations shows. On television. So, I don't know about Matt. I'm going to stick him in a corner because I don't know. But I don't think Barackman is bullshitting anybody. I think he's genuine. I think he's genuine in what he says and what he believes.
I think he exists.
I think Bobo. That's funny. Bobo is genuine in what he believes and what he says, and I think that Renee is genuinely skeptical of almost everything that comes in front of her, and I think that's great. I mean, maybe the producers are bullshitting us, and I think that they do edit the show to make things look more interesting than they actually are.
Yeah, but if you were going to tell me that Matt Moneymaker doesn't know the amount of horse shit in that type of show, that's bullshit. Matt is, obviously believes there's Bigfoot. He's a hard worker, and he's not in the realm of a Tom Biscardi, P.T. Barnum complete bullshitter, but he's such a hypester that it's just what steams my nads is this whole claim of scientific process when it's anything but the majority of the time in what we see. That's just wrong, man. That I think is wrong. When you claim in a TV show, whatever the median, well, we're scientifically going out and you're exercising bad science, it's misleading, and I'm going to sue their ass for $3 million.
So do you think the world would be a better place without the Bigfoot show? I mean, I'm sorry, not without the Bigfoot show. The world would clearly not be a better place without the Bigfoot show, but without Finding Bigfoot.
Here's what I think is a possibility. You're going to get so many more yahoos walking around. Like, actually, it's good for the Big Feet because there's going to be so many fucking idiots walking around thinking they've got evidence of Bigfoot that it's going to make it easier for them to hide. So maybe it is a mixed blessing.
I'll tell you that from the standpoint of, it's to a much smaller scale, but in the same way that the Georgia hoax was a boon to getting people interested in the subject, I know, based looking at just web trends for some of the Bigfoot related sites that I host, when Finding Bigfoot was on the air in its first run, there was a huge increase in interest in the subject. All the websites showed a pickup of interest. So, is that not a good thing?
It depends. Well, yes and no. I guess. I mean. But if this, the way in which, I mean, it's going to attract idiots. I don't see it attracting anyone with a reasonable sensibility. Oh boy!
Well, you got to sort through. You're getting raw material, and you have to sort through the good ones from the bad ones. You can't
for organizations and websites that have got a product to sell. Finding Bigfoot's great. Because it gets people interested, they're going to sell more. For those that are interested in genuine scientific research, won't make a scrap of difference because you're not going to get new scientists. Yeah. You're not going to get a scientist turning on Animal Planet and think, oh, blimey, never heard about this Bigfoot thing before. I'm taking it seriously now because Bobo and Cliff are convinced that these are squatchy.
Well, how likely is it you're going to hear a scientist say blimey at all, about anything? But anyway.
Well, they might be an English scientist. You never know.
You never know.
I mean, here's a question for you. We're talking about the BFRO, obviously. If the BFRO were incorporated as they should be.
As they should be.
Would the BFRO get a worse... Better Business Bureau rating than Dr. Ketchum's
Better Business Bureau was a total joke. And I say that as a business who's been approached by them on multiple occasions. I don't think they mean a damn thing. But anyway, probably would get a worse rating than her, because, you know, people like us would complain.
19 complaints, including 10 serious complaints.
Yeah.
Filed against the business. Failure to respond to 3 complaints.
If it wasn't the case
that were not resolved.
But if it wasn't the case that they would give you a great rating if you paid them to give you a great rating, this is my problem with them. If you give them, and this is, oh man, we've totally gone off the rails here. I had this woman from the Better Business Bureau calling me for like months trying to get us to hook up with her and give them the money and get the great rating until someone complained, right? So as long as we're giving them money, we get the little sticker for our door. It's a scam. Yeah. Anyway.
It's low-grade mafia.
I have a question. There's actually a really good question on our Facebook wall here. Lee Trodden. I hope I'm saying that right, Lee. You have $1 million to place a bet on where Bigfoot will be first found. Where exactly would you pick and why?
On this planet.
Okay. Next question.
That's good.
No, come on. You got to be more specific than that.
How do you define Bigfoot?
Unknown. Well, that's good. That's an excellent question.
Relic hominid.
A relic.
Describe a basic description. Upright.
Bipedal.
Hairy,
sometimes.
But not Ukrainian.
Relic hominid.
So like Almas, you could be an. I guess you got all kinds. Well, this is the question. Where? Come on, Paul. Where?
Given the rioting that we've had recently, I would say Tottenham. Relic hominids, subpar intelligence. It's all there.
Moneymaker's imagination.
Knuckle dragging.
I would say that the Orang Pendek in Sumatra was the best.
Really?
Best bet. Yeah. And I'll tell you why. It's because the researchers that are going to Sumatra, even the crap ones that are going, are at least able to walk a few hundred yards from their trucks. Mm. I'm sorry. The problem is that, and it's not the fault of the Weekend Warrior Bigfoot researchers.
No.
Is that if all you've got is a weekend, then you're not going to get deep into forests.
No.
Whereas at least the guys that are going to Sumatra and stumbling around are 2, 3, 4 weeks in the jungle, and so they've got a better chance of seeing wildlife than somebody who's nipping out for the weekend in between trips to McDonald's.
I couldn't agree with you more. Before I move on for that, say that it's not just happening in Sumatra. There are people in this country who are going out for more than just a long weekend, more than just camping by the side of the road, who are sort of going deep into the bush and spending a significant period of time there. That's happening besides Sumatra.
But statistically, they are much bigger forests in America than they are in Sumatra.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Yep.
So, you know, with the best will in the world, even if you've got a dedicated team going out for weeks at a time, they're going in. They're a tiny group of people going into a huge forest. Sumatra is a much smaller place, and the forests that they're going to, or rather the jungle that they're going to, is a much more concentrated area where the sightings have been reported. Very concentrated. They're not even covering half the island. So I think Sumatra's a better bet. It's a lot more unspoilt, and of course there are great apes in the area.
Do you agree with that?
Well, I wouldn't call them great. Maybe very good.
Do you think Sumatra? It sounds like you agree with him, Scott.
I would agree for those two reasons. It seems like the research that's been going on there, and the anecdotal evidence, and the actually a little more scientifically done in that region. It seems good personally, based on what I experienced 19 years ago. Around the Klamath River, the mouth of the Klamath, is where I would, if there were unlimited funding.
Well, he's saying you're making a bet. It is not that you're going to go, you're not going to use this $1 million to do anything productive. You're just going to go to Las Vegas and make a bet. So you're not using the $1 million to find Bigfoot.
I'm sorry. Well, yes, I would agree with Baldwin. I think Sumatra is probably And, you know, part of that is actually the mindset that it is accepted by more scientific people, that zone. So it can attract more people who are, I think, more in tune with the scientific method, and they have a better chance of actually getting some evidence. And hopefully they don't kill anyone.
I think part of it is, we're going back to the subject we've been discussing for most of the show. The idea of a creature like this in Sumatra hasn't been spoiled by the tabloid press, by shows like Finding Bigfoot, and so scientists will be more open to it. But I think the other reason is, if you're going to go to Sumatra for several weeks, you might as well go and do it properly, rather than going out and lighting a campfire and pissing on trees and smoking and all the other things that some Sumatran researchers tend to do.
Where do the Sumatran researchers piss?
They take a bottle with them, from what I've no idea.
and then they throw it in the woods.
I bet they're pissing on trees, is all I'm saying.
But if the question is,
you got to take a leak somewhere. You can't just carry it around with you for 3 weeks.
if the question is, where will a North American Bigfoot be found?
Okay.
I don't know. It would be easy for me to, given that the between us, we know more about what's going on in Texas than and surrounding states than we do about perhaps most, you know, other parts of the country. It would be easy to say Texas. They've got these. In fact, it's not even in Texas, but the Area X camera traps up everywhere. Mm-hmm. That would make sense for an answer. Otherwise, I think you'd have to go to Pacific Northwest, Oregon, Washington.
Yeah. I think I'd say,
you know, Mack truck is going to hit one sooner or later.
That would be great. I think that I'd have to.
That's nice.
If I'm betting money, I have to bet with my homies. I'm going to say that it's going to be in the southeastern corner of the country, but that's only because I know what's going on in the southeastern corner of the country, and I really don't know what's going on in the northwestern corner of the country. But I think it's going to be in one of those two places. I think it'll be in the Pacific Northwest, up into British Columbia, perhaps, or down in the southeast. I don't think it's going to happen in Ohio, but that's just, you know, me talking.
Two words. Topeka, Kansas.
There was another, going back to the Erickson Project, I'm just going down the wall poster because we've been recording for more than an hour now. Jorge Carranco. I feel like we've used Jorge's before. I remember stumbling over his name in the past, so hopefully I'm saying it right.
I never use Jorge.
Jorge Carranco. He says, I second the Erickson Project, which we've talked about quite a bit. Has anyone you actually know seen the supposed money shot of the female full-face frontal video from the Erickson Project? Do you guys know about this rumored full-face frontal female panting Bigfoot video? And have you seen
I've heard rumors. I've also heard rumors of some of the photographs. In fact, I have seen some of the photographs that are part of the Erickson Project. I'm not convinced. So unless there is a little golden cache somewhere of stuff that's a damn sight better than the stuff I've been shown, I have my doubts as to whether anything is convincing.
I know of people who have supposedly seen the video, and unfortunately I don't believe I'm at liberty to say who that is because of the way that I hear these things. If the video is what they say it is, and the people of which I know, and I'll tell you when I got off the air, that's horribly unfair to everyone listening to this, but I just can't. So if it is what they say it is, then awesome. You know what? That sounds great. And the people I know who have seen it, or who I know of who have seen it, said that it looked really interesting. But part of me thinks that
the New York baby footage looked interesting. It didn't prove a damn thing.
Well, no, it was fun to look at.
It's interesting. It's more video. It's going to be inconclusive.
So it doesn't matter. Are you saying that it doesn't matter no matter what's on this video?
No, it'll be interesting.
It might be interesting, but as far as scientific evidence, if it's merely being reported, it's interesting.
Well, supposedly this is, interesting. That's the word that I said. So what's supposedly on this video is like the face of a Bigfoot. And so what I've heard, the tongue is black and it's like, kind of panting or something in the video, and you can see its mouth, and you can see its face, and you can see its skin. This is what I've heard. I've not seen it. I have not spoken to someone who has seen it, but I've spoken to people who have, and they say that the people who saw it were impressed. But what the hell does that mean? That means absolutely nothing, right? What I just said is a total load of bullshit until we see the video.
Unless the video is of a female Bigfoot eating pancakes, I'm not.
Yeah.
Until it comes forward. So I have to say, Jorge, I know people who have supposedly have seen it, and they say it's interesting. But until, well, interesting, I guess I just got yelled at for using that word. Fascinating.
Damn you and your interesting comments.
But who knows? I mean, until this thing comes out, and I don't know. And I'm
I would dearly love for this documentary to come out and to blow me away.
When is it supposed to come out?
About 4 years ago.
Yeah, right. So are we waiting?
It's supposed to be when they get the, according to the website, it's when they get the peer review results.
Well, that could take years.
That's science, man. It takes time.
Well, get the freaking video out. I want to see my video. I want to see the black-tongued lady Bigfoot. I don't want
to. Yeah, I'm sorry, but the video's got nothing to do with the DNA.
No, it doesn't.
So it's stalling.
It sounds weak. I mean, the face. I mean, that, you know, I don't know. It just sounds like if it was that blockbuster, why would they hold? I mean, if you got that kind of video, it's supposedly so groundbreaking. Well, why wait for the DNA result? You know.
Well, like, I could make the argument, and because I have made this argument, not on the show necessarily, but I mean, I'm associated with people who have said that if we find ourselves in possession of some really interesting evidence. Or some of the compelling evidence, we're going to take our sweet time in making sure that it's, you know, developed well and that we have our, you know, I's dotted and all that kind of crap. But that being said, this Erickson Project thing does seem like it's been going on since 1968. I mean, it seems like it's been going on forever.
Well, they also have some very what's the best way to describe them? Interesting people involved in the project, and I'm gonna leave it at that. Wasn't this project supposed to include a video that Dr. Bindanagel was involved in Texas?
Oh, I don't know. Was it?
Well, he claimed to have had a sighting a couple of years ago and a video recording of it.
Really, I hadn't heard that.
And he wouldn't talk about it.
I had no idea.
I think what's interesting about this project is an awful lot of stories and rumor and bullshit comes out of it.
Yeah, there is a total, and I think you can see it even in the thread on our Facebook page. You can see the blending of Melba Ketchum's DNA and the Erickson Project and the Hunter shooting. There's such like a patina of bullshit that wraps around this thing. It's hard to say what's real and what's not, and what's rumor and what's just outright fabrication by third parties. It's impossible to know, I think, exactly what's going on here.
All I'll say is that when this documentary eventually comes out, and I'm sure it'll be available on a particular website at an extortionate cost to buy on DVD.
I'm hoping it'll be on Fox, on, you know, Fox. It'll be right there.
Finding Bigfoot exclusive.
I dearly, dearly want it to be conclusive and sharp video and fantastic and all documented. But
yes,
my gut feeling is that it'll be a piece of shit.
Bingo.
I actually completely agree with what you just said, so I have nothing else to add.
Yeah. Well, this is something we've also talked about on the show, about video evidence. Video evidence, unless you can conclusively prove a human-like object is moving faster than a human could possibly act, video footage in this day of CGing is going to be worthless. It's worthless. It doesn't do anything scientific.
Well, that could be why we haven't seen the Erickson video. Maybe, and I'm just talking here, but maybe they've said this isn't good enough, and maybe that is why they're waiting for the DNA. Maybe they've concluded that it's interesting video, but it can't ever be enough.
Yeah, we just don't know. I mean, it sounds like what they're doing could actually be a nicely cautious
yeah.
attitude. Like, they've got to wait for the peer review. That's what they were talking about. Good. And wait for it. And then, who knows, maybe the peer review will come back. Not necessarily this is junk, but it's like, if that comes back, well, some interesting stuff. I hate to use that word again. But it's inconclusive.
If
that
we give them
a bit of a step, that would be, hey, wait a minute. There was something here we didn't quite know. At least it wasn't, a hair off a bison's ass or something.
And if we give them the benefit of the doubt that they're not in this to make a buck, but they're in this to prove the existence of the species, then the way that they're behaving makes perfect sense, because we know a video won't do it. So why release the video? What's the point? If they're not looking for fame and fortune, if they're what they're trying to do is prove the existence of the species, then I think that their behavior up to this point actually makes perfect sense, if that's what they're trying to do.
Look, I think we talked about it before, but I think the thing, what's going to, in my opinion, short of a Mack truck hitting one of these things, what it's going to take is in the history of discovery of larger primates, is going to be like one, maybe two people, probably a female, because they can probably get closer to larger, someone in the field, not for 2-3 weeks, we're talking months, someone with good primate experience, willing to go into historically rich areas of apparent sightings, willing to take that chance, and with good photographic equipment, DNA sampling, alcohol swabs, the whole thing. It wouldn't surprise me, actually, if someone right now is doing that. Someone with the dedication has looked at this enough. They heard Jane Goodall say, hey, look, I think this is real. And someone who's just kept it quiet, get it not involved with all the TV, podcast, horse shit, which we're caught up in, sitting on our asses doing nothing. God damn it, let's get out there.
I was out there. I was out there 2 weeks ago. I was anyway, go ahead.
At least we don't do it every week.
No. I guess I don't disagree with you, Scott, when you say that, but I don't know of a species that's been proven that way. You know, the way that you prove a species is you bring one in. You know, I'm not saying it's impossible to do what you just said. I can't point to a species that was previously unknown, that was proven to exist in the way that, I mean, that's not how they've discovered gorillas. Diane Fossey came around decades after the first the first gorilla had been shot and dragged out of the woods.
But it would be
how
interesting
would the
to go.
Proved? I'd like to. I was just going to say
it would be interesting to be able to go back and see what sort of talk was going around about the mountain gorilla, and indeed the lowland gorilla, which was sort of 50 years earlier, and even the giant panda. Because by all accounts, the giant panda is just as elusive as Bigfoot. Appears to be. Do you know, in all these years, the giant panda's only been filmed in the wild once. Every piece of footage that we see is in a nature reserve.
Do you guys remember how the giant panda, actually, even though it's not a primate, was verified when they found the baby one crying in a tree, and the lady found it and brought it out. Like a bastard.
Well, there you go. They brought one out.
But I would like to know about, I think I agree with you, Brian. Yeah, you're right. I was more referring, or should have been clear in stating that as far as beyond the verification, as far as actually finding out more about these things. But it actually could be found out this way. I mean, because I think we're dealing with something that is really extraordinarily, obviously rare and really bright and very, for whatever genetic memory reason, perhaps is wary of our species. Perhaps that old, maybe our ancestors hunted it. Therefore, it just stays the fuck out of our way. Sees us killing things with our fire sticks. Goes, oh, that's not good to be around.
Fire sticks.
So I don't know.
Like that. I like
fire
sticks.
Rifles.
Fire sticks. Yeah. Ugh. I mean, fire stick. I mean, go ahead, Paul.
In many ways, this leads on to one of the other questions that's been asked by Russell Bynum.
Bynum.
Can you determine population of a given species based on their food intake and its effect impact on their range?
I don't know enough.
Yeah, we don't know enough about them, but I have seen, I can't remember where it was, but it was somewhere, Sumatra, Indonesia, where a few years ago they did announce that there was a colony of orangutans based solely on nests. They hadn't seen them, but they decided they were there because we've seen enough nests. and they put a figure on it. They said it's a colony of 2,500.
Really?
That's a whole heck of a lot of invisible orangutans. Monkeys, yeah.
Or it could have been one that makes lots of beds.
Very, very busy. One, like, obsessive compulsive nest maker.
But then, but
where's a maid outfit?
My, I mean, I remember we did discuss this at the time, not on the show, but we did discuss it at the time, but it was a long time ago and brain cells aren't what they used to be.
No.
But one of the issues with that, of course, was is this announcement a politically motivated in any way to try and get protection of forests in the area? If you can't prove they exist, say you've found all the nests and...
Yeah.
Announced
there. That's an interesting topic.
Decision. So, you know, I'm sure you could, in many ways, determine the population of a given species given enough metrics, such as food intake and damage done to the environment and nests, etc. But of course, we don't know any of that unless you're going to count sticks that happen to fall in certain patterns. In the forest.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that we know enough about how to how to view the evidence of them having been present.
And as I keep saying, if these stick formations are evidence of Bigfoot, there's an awful lot of Bigfoot in the forest behind my house.
They're everywhere
in England.
They're everywhere. All right. We've been going for about 90 minutes now, and we didn't talk about Johnny Dagger yet.
Who?
Good.
Johnny Dagger. Okay, good enough. I don't want to go any further than that.
You're going to have to fill me in now. It's not fair to keep me hanging on there.
The Mount St. Helens Massacre video we put on our Facebook wall the other day. Johnny Dagger, the guy that jumps out of the bushes with full camo and green face paint.
Yeah. So
are you ready for this? Are you ready for this? Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. The love child of Bear Grylls and Tom
Descartes. Exactly. Yeah, okay.
I mean, we talk about finding Bigfoot. I am surprised in some ways that they, that none of the production companies have come up with the idea of a sort of Bear Grylls versus Bigfoot type show and send him out into a forest.
Maybe that's what Johnny Dagger is.
Hopefully he'll get anally raped.
Maybe Johnny Dagger. I mean, maybe you're looking at his pilot, I mean, right there.
You might not get a whole show, a whole series out of it, but you might get a you know, 90-minute special out of it.
A show and a half.
Yeah, I think it'd be fun, and obviously with Bear Grylls, as long as there's a hotel nearby, it'll go down well.
Did we ever talk about on the show? I don't remember. Not Bear Grylls, the other guy, the Survivor Man.
I think we did. Did we? He said he thinks he may have had an encounter.
Yeah, okay, we talked about that. Yeah, we talked about that. Okay,
that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
have we run out of things to talk about now?
We've run out of time. It's we've been 90. It's an hour and 27 minutes now or so.
But it's gonna be February before we record again. So
well, I can't help that.
Yeah.
Scott,
how's your hiking going?
Yes,
it's going good. The dream of the completed through hike this year will not be happening because of the tendonitis I had for a month, and money's running low, but I'm very happy with the footage and the interviews and the great hikers I've met, so I'm excited about putting the film together. I'm still going to hike about another 170 miles, that's the plan, hiking the last 57 miles of Maine. So once everything dries up from Irene, I plan to get back out there, finish it. So overall happy. A little sad that the whole through hike thing. I'm going to end up doing half. So if it actually turns out well, then the sequel.
Yeah, and one of these days I'll go out and do a bit more section hiking. And because, as I explained to Brian, having hiked a section of the AT up at near Bear Mountain in New York, I'm averaging 1 mile a year.
That's good. Well, if you're cryogenically frozen, you have a shot then.
I might take a while to do the full AT section hiking in that way, but I'm averaging 1 mile a year, which is pretty good.
That's good, 2,190 miles or something. Hey, I wanted to say one thing. I hiked a bit in the White Mountains in New Hampshire, And I had heard that they were really rugged and you know, and I thought, well, that's probably going to be hyped a little bit. Man, I am telling you, the tops of these mountains and the dense forestation up there is amazing. I mean, they've got these stubby little pine trees that I think could hold a literal army of midget Sasquatch. I mean, I'm not kidding, or something in there, because you get up top, it's beautiful, but it's so amazing how tightly packed the pine trees are, and it just goes on for just, and you're heading down the mountain, it's the same. There could be shit in there that you would have no idea. I mean, that we just couldn't get in with our puny little bodies. So if I ever hear, like, a report from the White Mountains of New Hampshire, I wouldn't immediately dismiss it, because it seems to me there's plenty of places to hike.
Good to know.
Yeah.
All right.
Fascinating.
Out of curiosity,
yeah.
What other wildlife have you seen so far? Because you must have done.
There's an orgy.
Have you seen any unicorns?
No. Let's see. I saw four bears. I saw a mama bear and three cubs about 3.5 months ago, 8 miles south of Waynesboro. A lot of cool centipedes. They've got huge rat snakes out here. These like 3-4. Sometimes 5 foot long, thick black snakes that look like they would belong in the Amazon somewhere.
Yikes.
Got some footage of those, racer snakes, leprechaun. deer, though not, I expected to see more deer, but there's not that many. It's a very, very rugged trail. A lot of roots, a lot of boulders relative to the Pacific Crest Trail. And I'm really looking forward to Maine. Apparently, there's tons of moose up there and some really challenging climbing. So hopefully that'll be fun.
Sweet.
Yeah.
So you might do a sequel. You could just do the Kickstarter thing again. I mean, that worked out pretty well the first time.
You know, who knows? Maybe people will be pissed that I didn't, you know, finish the whole thing. I mean, it was really tough to make. I had to make the decision, man, not to do it, because I was banged up. And I was actually had shot more footage than I thought at a certain point in time. And you don't want to be able to shoot too much footage, because then it takes forever to edit the thing. So I only need about another 6-7 hours footage to have about an hour and a half film. But I've been, like I said, really happy with the quality of the people and the stories and the scenery. And the GoPro camera has been awesome.
I think
I've gotten some good footage with that. And the fire towers and the weather and stuff. Oh my God, I met this dude. He was a 69. I ran into this guy completely coincidentally on an off trail. He's a 69-year-old still working comic named Bob Seibel. And I used to do comedy for 12 years, and it was just weird that two comics were lost on the same trail. And we hiked together for like 4 days, and the guy was just a complete crack up. Granted, he was completely naked and touching himself, I mean, there's a lot of, and then we ended up in this shelter where this massive hailstorm hit us, and then this 300-pound lady came in and started playing the trumpet. That was pretty surreal. And it's all on tape. Available
got the
flip-flop flipping. What was that?
I look forward to that. I want to see.
Yeah, I hope it turns out good. Hopefully I won't muck it up in the editing process.
Excellent. So when do you think? How long will it take you to make this masterpiece of a film?
Oh, yes, masterpiece, yes. Hopefully I have it available for download and in DVD form. The goal is mid-March.
Wow, all right. That seems reasonable.
So, and again, I want to say a personal thank you to Brian.
Oh, stop. Stop it.
Idea Park. For donating.
Quit it.
Not donating, but for being partial funder.
Yeah.
Idea Park... They gave a chunk. They gave a good chunk of dough toward this project. So I'm going to be washing his car for many years.
I'm going to edit that out.
No, keep it in.
Well, that tendonitis, I'm not sure. It's a truck, so you're going to have a hard time getting to the top. But
yeah.
All right, cool. Paul, do you have anything to say for yourself? Anything
to
plug? Are you doing anything interesting?
I've done a couple of interesting talks recently on the Minnesota Iceman, recapping.
Cool.
Everything up to and including our conversations with Vern Langdon a few years back.
Yes, which, you know, I'm so glad we actually recorded him talking about that, because I don't know that that's anywhere else except on the Bigfoot Show.
No, it doesn't seem to be. And I've actually got a few hours of other conversations I've had with him over the mm-hmm. over the years mm-hmm. That were quite useful to that. And I'm giving a talk.
You should come to the.
I'm giving a talk at a conference in September, a paranormal conference on Bigfoot evidence or lack of, which will be interesting. But I've got to get that down to 30 minutes, which is really tough for me.
You can't do a 30-minute presentation.
Well, I could just go up on stage and say there isn't any yet.
I can't ask you what the weather's like and get an answer in 30 minutes. What are you talking about? That's impossible.
I've been given a thirty minute time slot. I tell you, I did a talk on Bigfoot and evidence to a group a couple of months ago. The talk was fine. I probably went to about an hour and 15, hour and 20 minutes, and then had an hour and a half of questions afterwards.
Cool. That's always the best part.
Yeah, except I was in a serious hurry to get to the other end of the country for the following morning to do a job. And the questions, some of them were great questions, I've got to say. But it was quite good fun. So we're doing another talk. And then I'm pretty much going to retire, I think, from talking about Bigfoot, because I think everybody in England's heard me.
If you've got a good thing on the Minnesota Iceman, we'll talk after the show. I might have another gig for you. Cool. Good for you. I think you should. I think you'll probably be a good speaker on the subject. I think you shouldn't retire.
Oh yeah.
It's a nice talk. I think everybody that listens to the podcast knows what stance I come from.
Has it been recorded? I mean, is it like on video somewhere?
No, it's not recorded on video, and there are some reasons for that. I always insist that they're not recorded because there's some imagery and some recordings in there that recorded. And the fact that I just don't like seeing myself on video.
Yeah, who does?
I don't.
Scott apparently has no problem with it. All right. Well, I'm going to plug my just about 1 month from now on the 1st of October is the Texas Bigfoot Conference in Tyler, Texas. And
if I wasn't so busy, I'd come out for it.
I wish you would. It's fun. We got Ian. I think he's a Sir Ian Redman. Sir Ian Redman is coming. We're flying him all the way from England to he's an honest to God, you know, like serious primatologist guy. I mean, he's Yeah, he's going to be there. I'm really looking forward to it.
Is Gimlin going to be there?
I don't believe so.
Redman's the guy that introduced Sir David Attenborough to gorillas. Late 70s, 1978, I think he was.
Yeah, I can't wait to talk to him. He looks like a really interesting
fellow. He is a really interesting guy. He's what's the word? A sort of understudy of Diane Fossey.
Right, yeah, yeah. What is the word? She was his mentor.
Protégé,
exactly. It's French. That's why we couldn't think of it. Yeah, well, that's in Tyler, Texas. It's only $25 to get in the door. That's where we get you, to be perfectly honest. Thanks for giving that away.
I came to the conference a few years ago, and I think it's remarkably good value.
It's crazy good, isn't it?
I do some conferences over here. I was just looking at going to James Randi's conference when it comes back to London. The tickets for that are going to be £280.
Good God, that's like $1,000. No, it's not. Anyway, that's a lot of money.
You get two things. You can either get conferences that are done for the love of it, and people are charging you sort of £25 for the weekend, and you get others that are extortionate. And some of the ones that are done for the love of it are still £100 for a ticket.
Yeah,
which is like about $5,000.
I think it is. I think it is $5,000. but anyway, TBRC $25 to get in the door. And it goes up from there. You can get all kinds of packages and go to TexasBigfoot.com. if you
and you get to corner Jeff Meldrum for 45
yes,
minutes.
Yes, Jeff Meldrum will be there again this
on
year.
On any subject you like.
You can show him pictures of the mushrooms you took outside your house that have Bigfoot hiding behind them.
I would recommend going with a good thick album of photographs yes. with red circles.
Mostly trees.
Because I know he likes to think of himself as a proper scientist, but honestly, he confided in me. He really loves blob squatch photos.
You're just being mean now. yeah, the interesting.
And if you've got personal stories about the blob squatch photos, that would.
You know
just
what he said to me last time I talked to him? What he really wishes somebody would bring to him at one of these conferences is a big bag of Sasquatch poop. That's what he wants. He wants a big bag of squatch crap because he hasn't had that. In years happened to him, so
I just feel a bit guilty after that we saw him at the God it was the 2007 conference.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
And one of these lunatics with an album of blobscotch photos sort of cornered him, and we all left him to it.
Yeah,
and he kept backing up until he had nowhere to go.
Well, wasn't he trapped in that little space between the two doors?
He was trapped in the foyer. I think he thought the main door would open and it wouldn't,
and he was stuck in there.
And I did feel a bit guilty, but not for long.
All right.
Are we still on?
Yeah, we're still recording. But we're about to stop. We're going to stop right now.